So we start out this morning. I want to show you some pictures. Throw up the next one. Here's the first picture. You may have seen this one in the news. That's of that boy in Syria. His building was bombed, and that's him in the back of an ambulance. Here's another picture. This changed the refugee crisis, this picture here. You probably remember that one. Here's another picture. Just have a look at it. Self-explanatory. Next picture. And then one more. Got a final picture. This picture is of a First Nations reserve. Someone's living in that in Manitoba. As you look at those pictures, how do they make you feel? When you look at those pictures, most of us, probably in this room, have a reaction to at least one of those pictures. Because generally, as human beings, most of us anyway, when we see or hear about injustice, we react. Sometimes the injustice is so great that we cry out to God, we lament. And we're in a short 3-week series looking at the lament psalms. Lament means to cry out, to sorrow, to grieve, to give voice to our suffering. Lament psalms teach us to do that. Last week we looked at Psalm 13. Next week we're going to look at Psalm 130. Today we're going to look at Psalm 10 and the cry of injustice. I want us to start by understanding this. God is a God of justice. In Psalm 10 verse 16, we see how the psalmist viewed God. Listen to these words. David's writing this. The Lord, that's Yahweh, the Lord is king forever and ever. The nations will perish from his land. For the psalmist, God was king. What kind of king was God? Well, if we go back to Psalm 9, and actually in the Hebrew, in the Greek interpretation of the Hebrew Bible, Psalm 9 and 10 are one psalm. Many feel that really they are one psalm. But they're different in their styles, so that's why in our Bible they're split up. But what kind of king was God? We'll go back to Psalm 9, verse 7, where it says this. The Lord reigns forever. He has established his throne for judgment. God, the king, has established his throne. For what purpose? For the purpose of judgment, for the purpose of justice. God is a God of justice. Isaiah 30:18 says this, yet the Lord longs to be gracious to you, therefore he will rise up to show you compassion, for the Lord is a God of justice. God is a God of justice. Everything he is and does is right and true and just. The God who reveals himself to us in the Bible is a God of justice. So a question for us to ask is, what is justice? A simple definition of justice is this. Justice is giving someone their due. The Hebrew word, and the Old Testament was originally written in Hebrew, the Hebrew word for justice is mishpat. Mishpat. And it occurs in various forms over 200 times in the Old Testament. Mishpat means two things. Number one, it means to fairly punish wrongdoers. And the second meaning of this word is to ensure the marginalized get their due. Over and over in the Old Testament, mishpat describes the caring for and the taking up the cause of widows and orphans, and immigrants, and the oppressed, and the poor. And so biblical justice has two aspects to it. It has a punitive aspect, and it has a distributive aspect. Punitive justice is when a criminal is punished for his or her wrongdoing. And the Bible teaches that God is a God of punitive justice, that he is a God who punishes evildoers. Exodus chapter 34 and verse 7 says, God will not leave the guilty unpunished. Now, when we think of God's justice, this is the primary way we think of God's justice. We think of God being just. We think of God punishing those who are evil, those who have sinned. That's what we think about when we think about God's justice. But there's a whole other side to God's justice, and it's the distributive side. Distributive justice is about ensuring that the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized are provided for and treated properly. And while we primarily think of God's justice as punitive, the Bible speaks primarily of God's justice as distributive. God wants the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized to be provided for and are treated properly. Look at Psalm 10 and verse 17 and 18. It says this: "You, Lord, hear the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them, and you listen to their cry, defending the fatherless and the oppressed, so that mere earthly mortals will never again strike terror." As you read the Bible, it should become real clear that God is passionate. God is very passionate about how the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized are treated. He identifies with them. He draws alongside them. He has compassion for them. Listen to Psalm 146, starting in verse 7. "He upholds the cause of the oppressed and gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoner free. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow. He frustrates the ways of the wicked." Distributive justice is a key expression of God's heart. God is a God of justice. He's a God of punitive justice, and he's a God of distributive justice. God is a God of justice. People, not so much. We are created as human beings in God's image. And thus, we're supposed to reflect God's loving, just character. And yet, because of the fall, we often do the exact opposite. And in Psalm 10, verses 2 to 11, we see described there the character and the actions and the attitudes of many today. In verses 2 to 6, we see the arrogance that leads to justice. And then in verses 7 to 11, we see the injustice that flows from arrogance. Look how the unjust, the wicked person, is described in this lament psalm in verses 2 to 6. "In his arrogance, the wicked man hunts down the weak who are caught in the schemes he devises. He boasts about the cravings of his heart. He blesses the greedy and reviles the Lord. In his pride, the wicked man does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. His ways are always prosperous. Your laws are rejected by him. He sneers at all his enemies. He says to himself, 'Nothing will ever shake me.' He swears, 'No one will ever do me harm.'" Notice in verse 2, it tells us that the unjust person is arrogant. In verse 3, he's boastful. In verse 4, he's prideful. And listen, when there is much pride in a person's life, there is no room for God. The unjust person is also prosperous. Notice again verse 5. "His ways are always prosperous. Your laws are rejected by him. He sneers at all his enemies." This person rejects God and his ways, and he says this: "In this world, only the strong succeed. If you're not successful, it's your own fault. The poor are poor because they want to be. Sucks to be them." That's the heart of this unjust, prideful, arrogant person. Verse 6 tells us that the wicked, unjust person is very self-confident. Notice it. He says to himself, Nothing will ever shake me. He swears no one will ever do me harm. The unjust person doesn't need God because he feels or she feels that nothing is going to shake or harm them. I don't know if you ever saw the James Bond movie GoldenEye. If you ever saw that, there was a guy in there, he was a computer program who went around saying, "I am invincible." Do you ever remember that? He wasn't so invincible at the end, but that's what he thought. And that's what this prideful, arrogant, unjust person thinks. They think, "I'm invincible. No one can touch me. I'm my own master." And that's how injustice usually starts. Injustice starts with an arrogance that renounces God and his ways and says, "I am the master of my own life." And then in verses 7 and 11 of Psalm 10, we see how injustice flows from that kind of attitude. It starts with a person's words in verse 7. Notice, "His mouth is full of lies and threats. Trouble and evil are under his tongue." The first way we commit acts of injustice towards another is through the words we speak. The Holocaust started when German leaders lied about the Jewish people. The leaders told the German people that the Jewish people were evil, that the Jewish people were the cause of disease, that the Jewish people were animals. The Holocaust would have never have happened if it hadn't started with lies being spread. Injustice starts with the words we speak. And when we dehumanize people through the words we use, injustice starts to live. And then in verses 8 to 10, we see that the unjust person commits violent acts towards others. Look at what it says. "He lies in wait near the villages. From ambush, he murders the innocent. His eyes watch in secret for his victims. Like a lion in cover, he lies in wait. He lies in wait to catch the helpless. He catches the helpless and drags them off in his net. His victims are crushed. They collapse. They fall under his strength." The psalmist speaks here of the horrible acts of violence that were committed by the arrogant and the unjust. Notice in these verses, they preyed upon the people who are weak and helpless. They lie in wait to harm the innocent. The psalmist here is picturing a world that we really don't like to think about. And yet, if we're honest, we would say that is the world in which we live. We live in a world that denies the reality of a living, loving, just God. And because of that, we live in a world full of abuse and oppression and injustice. Listen to these statistics. 25,000 children die each day of hunger or hunger-related causes. Nearly 2 million children are exploited in global sex trade. Over 45 million people are held in slavery today. 1.5 billion, that's with a B, people in our world have no access to medical care. 1.2 billion, again with a B, people live off a dollar a day. Americans spend more on Halloween than the entire world spends on malaria in a year. A child goes missing in India every 8 minutes. Nearly half of them are never found. And then where we have our mission in Vicente Guerrero, nearly 100% of indigenous young ladies are raped by the age of 18. That's the world in which we live. That's reality. And here in beautiful little Victoria, where we have our singing parkade staircases, yes, I'm still on that, we forget about all this stuff. We forget about it. And yet that's the world in which we live. We live in a world of oppression and injustice because a world has turned their back on a living, loving, just God. And in Psalm 10, verse 11, we see the conclusion the unjust person draws. He says to himself, God will never notice. He covers his face and never sees. Here you have the rationale for most unjust acts. God won't notice. He won't see. He's covered his face. When we think God is absent, or we think God doesn't care how we act, or we think God doesn't see what we do, then we've opened the door to committing all kinds of wickedness. And that's exactly what we're experiencing around the globe today. And so here's the question. And it's answered for us primarily in Psalm 10. As followers of Jesus, how are we supposed to live in an unjust world? As followers of Jesus, how are we supposed to live in this unjust world? Well, first thing we're supposed to do is lament. The first thing we need to do is lament. Notice verse 1. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? That's lament. That's David crying out to God, who is seemingly indifferent to the injustice that is happening in the world. When you've experienced injustice in your own life, or someone you know has experienced injustice, or you've seen injustice on the television or read about it in the newspaper, haven't you sometimes wondered, where is God? God, don't you see? God, don't you care? Haven't you sometimes said what the psalmist said? Why, God, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Like the psalmist, as Christ followers, we too are to lament. We too are to cry out to God, where is he? We're to cry out to God, asking him to act. Do you ever do that? Do you ever lament on behalf of the injustice in the world? When I saw the picture on the news of that boy in that ambulance from a bombing in Syria, my heart went out. And I cried out to God for the Syrian people. As followers of Jesus, we're to be people who lament over the injustice in the world. We're to be people who cry out to God and say, God, where are you? Do something. We're to be people of lament. And then we're to pray. Notice what David does. Psalm 10, starting in verse 12. He prays. Just in a typical, again, a typical lament psalm always goes from lament to the cry out, to the prayer, and then it ends with praise or hope. Well, in this case, David cries out, and he's teaching us that we need to lament over injustice, and then he prays. He says this, arise, Lord. Lift up your hand, O God. Do not forget the helpless. Why does the wicked man revile God? Why does he say to himself, he won't call me to account? But you, God, see the trouble of the afflicted. You consider their grief and take it in hand. The victims commit themselves to you. You are the helper of the fatherless. Break the arm of the wicked man. Call the evildoer to account for his wickedness that would not otherwise be found out. Look at David's prayer. He begins by saying, arise, Lord. Lift up your hand, O God. Do not forget the helpless. That's a call for God to roll up his sleeve and to do something about the injustice and deliver his people. Then David reminded God of the wicked, that they were actually boasting that they would get away with their shameful deeds and their unjust acts and that God wouldn't hold them to account. Then as David pours out his heart in prayer to God, he told God that the victimized people were putting their trust in him. And then he prayed, I love this, break the arm of the wicked man. Now that's my kind of prayer. And that, get him, God. Go get them. Do whatever you got to do. Mush them into the ground. Break their heads. I don't care. Justice. That's my kind of prayer. Yeah. But that's not actually what David was praying, unfortunately. Break the arm is a metaphor. What David is saying, he's saying, God, break the power of the oppressor. Free your captives. Break the oppressors and set the people free. David saw injustice being done and he prayed for God's help and God's intervention, and that we should do the same thing. I think sometimes as people, we need to expand our prayer lives. Have you ever noticed often what we pray about is two things? People that are sick, three things. People that have got relational problems and our own needs. And those are all good things to pray for. But I think sometimes we need to look beyond little beautiful Victoria, or even in beautiful little Victoria. And we need to raise our eyes and call out to God and lament and then pray to Him about the injustices we see around us. I think we need to expand our prayers like David and lament to God and then pour out our hearts in prayer to Him about the injustice that we see in our city, in our country, and in our world. And then we're not to stop there. We're to hope. Look at 10:16. I read this verse earlier to you. The Lord is King forever and ever. The nations will perish from the land. The nations will. That is a statement of hope. The psalmist here was placing his hope in the God of justice. He knew a day was coming when things would be set right. That was his hope, and that's our hope too. Jesus, we know this from the Gospels, came to establish the kingdom of God. A kingdom where justice flows like a river. A kingdom where the poor are given hope and the brokenhearted are comforted and the captives are set free. A kingdom where there's liberty, blessing, restoration, and inclusion. Jesus came to establish that kingdom. And while we do not see it fully realized yet, we do see glimpses of it. And one day, there will be a day of judgment. One day, there will be a day of holy reckoning. And on that day, people will have sown, what people have sown, they will reap. On that day, the terrifying, arrogant, prideful people who have dominated the earth will not get the last word. Jesus will. One day there will be no more pain, no more oppression, no more suffering, no more injustice, no more violence, because God is going to come and make everything new. One day there will be a new heaven and a new earth, and that is our hope. In the meantime, as I've said to you hundreds of times, we live in the in-between time, right? Between God's D-Day, the cross and the resurrection, and God's victory day when there's a new heaven and new earth, we live in this in-between time. And how are we to live in this in-between time? We're to lament over injustice. We're to hope for that day when everything will be set right. We're to pour out our hearts in prayer for the injustices we and others experience. And then we're to act. It's not just a matter of lamenting and praying and hoping, we're to act. Micah 6:8 answers the question of what it means to be a follower of Jesus in an unjust world. Micah 6:8, right in that verse, God clearly tells us what He requires. You probably all know it by memory. It's the theme verse for our church. He has shown you, O mortal, O man, O woman, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. Listen, acting justly is fundamental to who we are as Christ followers and kingdom people. If you're going to live a life in accordance with the ways of God, then the call to act justly is inescapable. It's who we are. It's how we're to live. We're to be a just people and we're to act justly. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right. Seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Proverbs 31, speak up for the people who have no voice, for the rights of all the down and outers. Speak out for justice, stand up for the poor and the destitute. God has given his followers and his church the work of justice in an unjust world. Listen, when we act justly, when we adopt our block, which we're going to as a church, and we're going to pour massive amounts of love on Churchill Estates and Creekside Estates, these co-ops, we're going to love those people there. When you go out and it's back to school time, and when you go out and you stay away from some of these stores who use slave labor in India and otherwhere to make clothes so you can go and buy them, when you say, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to buy my clothes for myself and my kids responsibly, you're acting justly. And frankly, we need to take that way more seriously in our little piece of heaven here. When we go down to Mexico and we build houses so people don't have to live in cardboard shacks, when we build schools so children can get an education to give them a better future, when we as a church decide we're going to do Christmas differently, when our young adults take a hot dog cart that they're raising money for, and if you want to help them, please come and talk to me. When they take a hot dog cart next door to Churchill Estates, over to Creekside Estates, and they build relationships with children through using that hot dog cart, and they build relationships where they can share the love of God, they're acting justly. And when we as a church build a dream center in the future that reaches out to single parents and the working poor, as we do all those things, we're acting justly. Now, I want you to understand this. This is so important to grasp. When we act justly, we are not just caring for the marginalized and the poor and the oppressed. When we act justly, we are not just doing good things. Listen, catch this. When we act justly, we are reflecting the image and the character of God. And that's what we're called to do. And when you act justly, when you go adopt your block, when you give a cup of cold water to somebody, when you help a homeless person, when you act justly, you are reflecting the image and the character of God. Grab that. That's why God calls us to act justly. Because we're created in his image and we're to reflect the image of a loving, just God. And so, of course, we're supposed to be people who go out and act justly. Because that's what we're called to do. And when we act justly, it impacts people's lives. I want you to watch a video. It's by one of our partners in Ministry International Justice Mission. I want you to watch this video. Then I'll come up, make a couple of comments. Powerful video. I love the part where they get their certificate and their debt's been paid in full. Isn't that awesome? Jesus came to set the captives free. And as followers of a just God, we're called to lament and to pray and to hope and to act. And doing so will not only set the captives free, it'll also reflect the image of a loving and just God to others. And that's why we're called to walk humbly and love mercy and act justly. And so let's go do that.